You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal. Follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson, joins us every week. And we actually will lead with baseball, your area of expertise. Earlier this week, the Atlanta Braves win an elusive World Series title, matching the total haul of World Series rings that their greatest generation in franchise history won. A random champion. A really random champion, David.
It actually is exciting to think about. So my mind has been going nonstop this month, having, you know, been covering the playoffs and been talking baseball all around the country on radio, etc. That wasn't a flex, by the way. I just get called on when people want to hear some truth about the playoffs. And as the Braves were celebrating, first I was thinking about the Marlins and how lucky we are to have won in 97 and again in 03. When you keep hearing first Braves title since 1995, the Braves were a subject of conversation in my whole career, basically, because they won the division every year but only won one World Series. And the question always was, is it better to be in the playoffs every year and never win a World Series except one, or never be in the playoffs, but when you are, you win the World Series? Because the Marlins were never in the playoffs except 97 and 03, but they won it twice. And people in Atlanta would always say, I would give it all up for two rings. And now they got their second ring, albeit 26 years later, with Freddie Freeman and a bunch of trade deadline acquisitions from their GM, Alex Anthopoulos, who, by the way, wasn't even there to enjoy it, which was something we could talk about as well, which just makes the season even crazier. But I'm so happy for Atlanta, but mostly I'm happy for Freddie Freeman.
They did it without their best player, Ronald Acuna Jr. I know the 03 Marlins had a lot of injuries that they survived and a lot of adversity that they faced, but this would have been random if they had their best player. Well, some would argue Freddie Freeman is their best player, actually, but Acuna not being available to them and them still winning in spite of that, it's a major achievement for that organization.
Well, on March 31st, on Nothing Personal, I actually, when I predicted the season, I said the Braves were going to win the World Series over the Yankees. And I predicted that because I looked at what they had done last year when they had made it to the League Championship Series and blew a 3-1 lead against the behemoth Dodgers. And I never felt the Dodgers would be able to repeat. So I couldn't choose them because no one repeats. It's impossible to repeat. No one has since the Yankees in 98 to 2000. And then I looked at Acuna and Marcelo Zuna, the former Marlin, and their best pitcher, Mike Soroka, and then Max Fried, who was a pretty good pitcher behind him, and Ian Anderson, and Ozzie Albies. And I looked through their lineup and said, wow, this is a team that can win it. Of course, I got it right for the wrong reason, but as a consequentialist, it doesn't matter. They won the World Series with a brand new outfield. Marcelo Zuna was kicked off the team and put on administrative leave for domestic violence. Ronald Acuna tore his ACL, and Mike Soroka tore his Achilles. Other than that, they were fully ready to go. And since, I would say, July, sort of like the Marlins, when I think back to the 03 Marlins, we should have been favored over the Yankees. No one thinks that, but we were the hottest team in baseball from May on in 03. And when we went into that series, we knew what the odds were because all players know the odds. We look at the lines of every game. We didn't understand why we weren't favorites. And the Braves, to me, should have been favorites over the Dodgers, and they should have been favorites over the Astros because they played better than those teams and were better than those teams for the last half of the season and into October. So they deserve to win, but it certainly was with a cast of characters that is unexpected.
Not to get too in the weeds on sports gambling, but you realize that the intention of every line, sometimes the house does some funky stuff, but the intention of every line is just to get 50-50 action. And teams like the Astros, Dodgers, and certainly the Yankees in 2003 were what you might call public teams, just established brands. So in order to get the kind of action that guarantees a house win just on VIG alone, you favor the Yankees in 03 or you favor the Dodgers this season.
Well, and by the way, the odds already are out for the 2022 World Series. And guess who's favored? Of course, it's the Dodgers are big favorites, and the Yankees are up there, and the Braves are not, and the Red Sox are like plus 1,600, and the Blue Jays are plus 1,800. Of course, that's why lines are made, which is why, and we have to whisper this because of sponsors. So at CBS, where I work, and maybe even with DraftKings, we have to whisper this. The house always wins. Shh, don't tell anyone.
You mentioned Alex Anthopoulos. Anthopoulos. I'm sorry. I'm married to a Greek. I'm sorry.
That means you should know how to say his name.
Well, that means maybe I said it right and you didn't say it right. Yeah. It's very.
Maybe. No. Alex may not be Greek. Let's go with that.
No, that name is definitely Greek.
Then it's definitely Anthopoulos.
Tomato, tomato. You have enough Greek Easters, you hear different pronunciations of that. It's common to make the I sound, but my experience. I'm not gonna pull the Greek card anymore.
By the way, you're doubling down. Why are you doubling down on this?
Because I've heard Greeks themselves, when they're talking Greek, pronounce it a lot more harshly.
Okay, so what's the name of the GM of the Braves?
Alex Anthopoulos.
Okay.
So wait. I've never heard. No. I've never heard this guy's name pronounced. So what is it?
It's Alex Anthopoulos.
Yeah, that sounds better.
As in the Acropolis, which also happens to be in Greece.
Yeah. All right,
How do you pronounce the Acropolis?
The Acropolis.
Okay. Alex Anthopoulos. It rhymes.
All right. Hang on. I'm going to Google Acropolis.
Keep all right, doubling well, that, down,
that
baby.
That has an I in it. This doesn't have an I in it. So.
Let's call him Alex. Let's call him Alex P. Keaton and move on.
Just saying the I makes that sound. There's no I in this. He literally has every other vowel but an I in his name. So he's very good, though. He wasn't able to celebrate the World Series championship because COVID. Remember that? That's still around. And he tested positive for COVID.
So we don't know for sure whether he tested positive. What we do know for sure, at least I haven't read so far, but again, I closed my eyes after the World Series and only opened them for you, Mikey. But I can tell you that he wasn't there. And I noticed it first when they were getting the trophy from the commissioner and the people who should be getting the trophy, Terry McGuirk, the chairman. Then you've got Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations. Then you have Brian Snitker. Then you have Alex P. Keaton, the president of baseball operations. And then on top of that, you'd have Freddie Freeman and Brian Snitker, the manager. And Alex was nowhere to be found.
Wait, you said I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said you don't know if he tested positive. You're CBSSports.com, the media company that you work for, reported that.
Okay.
Just saying, you're calling me out. Hazel May, can confirm, Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos tested positive, no symptoms for COVID Saturday. He watched the game with his family in Atlanta.
Okay, so I didn't read Hazel May, but that said, on the assumption that's correct, though I wouldn't dare to talk about somebody's sort of health because of HIPAA, I would only say this.
He confirmed it to Hazel May, so I'm good.
Oh, is he quoted?
Yeah, she can confirm that she quotes him. I just didn't want to be a distraction before the end. So she spoke directly to him.
So that's an interesting quote because that's the quote of someone who may not have tested positive but maybe is in the protocol. And I only say that because it's not a distraction. Oh, I guess if it had been announced beforehand, yeah. So it was only a distraction after. Yet, of course, before a game, everyone's on the field. Everyone knew there that Alex wasn't there. Yeah. So there was no shock. It's not like the players didn't know.
He's really good, by the way. His track record's phenomenal with the Atlanta Braves. This guy was a rising star in baseball.
So he started as an intern with me in Montreal in 2000.
Really?
Yeah, my first year in baseball.
So you probably do know how to pronounce his name.
No, what do I know? Listen, he was an intern. I never was introduced to him. No, I'm just kidding. But hold on.
Are you going to take credit for his success? Do it.
Absolutely zero. But I would like to ask you a question, and I'm going to bring it back to the Marlins because you've touched a bit of a nerve. You've touched a nerve, which is not hard for you to do with me.
What? Let's talk about A.J. Burnett ruining the rotation with that injury in 03.
No, I actually like to know why when we won the World Series in 03, you went so public so often that this was Dave Dombrowski's World Series and that Larry Beinfest and David Sampson didn't do crap.
There were a lot of players there that Dombrowski brought aboard, but I haven't been super public. And we hashed this out during one of the lockdown shows. You guys made a lot of important moves. I think.
So I gave you the math. Yeah. And you changed your mind.
Yeah.
And you ate shit, right? That's what you did because you were so interested in taking me down.
I didn't eat shit. It was more of an agree to disagree.
Oh, so you're not convinced yet. Fair enough.
Now let's look at the Braves. Look, you have your agenda, and I think Dombrowski's moves, also the first fire sale, obviously set the table for the turnaround in 03.
Mike, it's not an agenda. You're completely incorrect because what you think of what my role was in the 03 World Series is wholly irrelevant to what my role was in the 03 World Series, right? I don't need you to think that me and Larry were involved at all. It doesn't matter. But you're so quick to say that Alex is responsible for the Braves. Why don't you look at the roster and see who he's responsible for versus who his predecessor was responsible for in terms of drafting and having traded for? And I think you'll find it's an interesting mix as well, which means that like the Marlins, the Braves put together a team that both needed new components in order to get a job done, but also had old components. So Alex deserves a ton of credit, but the way you said it would indicate that he is solely responsible. And I would argue he may be solely responsible, but if you're going to say that, then so was Larry.
Fair enough. I mean, having to replace your entire outfield mid-season is quite the hurdle to clear for a general manager. And this team in particular had a lot of in-season tweaking. And they made real decent moves at the deadline. Jocktober paid dividends.
Terrible. First of all,
you don't like Jocktober?
First of all, here's what bothered me about Jocktober.
I'm doing really well for somebody that didn't watch a single second of this World Series so far, outside of the mispronunciation of a Greek GM's name.
So Jocktober had a terrible World Series.
Really?
I think he hit below 100.
That's perfect. Well, I saw he had a good NLCS, no doubt. I saw a bunch of Jocktober tweets.
So there was a lot.
My point wasn't that he had a good World Series. My point was that it was a good transaction for the Atlanta Braves, and that's irrefutable.
I refuse to refute you.
All right. Let's talk about Freddie Freeman's teeth. Did he go to the Liverpool team dentist? What's going on there? I just noticed these chompers. I saw videos on Twitter earlier this week of their celebration.
Is this good content to talk about people's veneers?
I obsess over it.
You do because you think they look fake, or because they love how fake. Perfect and white they are?
No, I don't like that look. He looks like Jim Carrey in the mask, just a grin. It's just too much, like Jurgen Klopp. Ugh.
So it's a very interesting thing. A lot of players get them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in Hollywood get them.
For sure. But a lot of people in Hollywood have good ones. These aren't necessarily great. Like I said, he went to the Robert Firmino dentist.
I'm not going to yuck on Freddie Freeman because I know him. And here's why. It's personal. He's one of the nicest players and people you'll meet in baseball.
Okay.
He's a top 10.
All right.
Combine talent and personality.
Yeah.
He may be a top 10 all time.
Yeah.
He is the most unassuming superstar.
Wait,
and people overuse that word.
You have rankings of talent meeting personality to make an all-encompassing great player?
No, it doesn't make him a great player. You have to be a great player first.
You have to be a great player. But when you combine his talent with his personality, he may be top 10?
Yes.
You always
don't ask me to do a top 5.
No, I'm not. You know, I'd love to jump at the chance of having you a top 5. You get really, it's not often where you get uncomfortable, but pointing out the veneers of your friends Dan Uglin and Freddie Freeman always seems to make you squirm a little bit.
I'll tell you why. It's a great point. I'm glad you remember that. I actually spoke to Ugla during the game on Wednesday night, And we were talking about the fact that his good friend Freddie was going to win a ring and how happy he was for him. And I wasn't thinking about Dan's veneers or Freddie's veneers at the time of the conversation because it doesn't matter to me. But I do think about it when I'm with them in person.
Okay, see? That's human of you. I think about them nonstop, but go on.
So I think that thinking about them when you're talking to them versus thinking about it nonstop, I think that's the difference between being normal and being obsessive.
Whoa, normal is a bit loaded here. I understand that what I'm doing is projecting some of my own faults onto this whole Freddie Freeman discussion, right? But we don't need to start judging.
Oh, I think that this is the perfect venue to judge because we could be talking about the fact that Freddie Freeman made it through a rebuild.
Yeah.
Now made it through. He got a big contract and he made a ton of money.
He also got COVID really bad last year, didn't he? He said he almost
so
died.
So bad. I can't say that he almost died.
Well, no, that was the chatter on the boards that I think he gave a direct quote that he felt like he was going to die.
I feel like I'm going to die every day at least once as part of my hypochondria.
Yeah.
I assume before my eyes close almost every night. I don't know if you can understand this because you're a goy, but the fact is that before I close my eyes every night, I always feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah.
It's a very bizarre
Freddie Freeman's 4-month journey from COVID victim. So he was, wow.
He did have bad COVID, and then he came back to win the MVP in that shortened season of 2020. He's just a professional player.
Yeah.
Great defender, great middle-of-the-order bat.
Hall of Famer?
100%.
Yeah, I agree.
Freddie
Especially
Freeman,
now that
a Hall of Famer.
Now that he's got that World Series ring, too. Not that that matters so much in baseball and their Hall
of Fame. But he also has something else, right? He's got the respect of the writers.
Yeah.
And we can say that doesn't count, but boy, that counts. He has a great relationship with all the writers because he's a good guy.
How is he still good? He's actually younger than I thought.
He's young. He's only 33.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be 33 next season. Presently 32. You should know better. You said he's your friend.
He's playing at 33 for his free agent contract.
Okay.
So that's a young free agent. He's a free agent. Now the Braves are a really big pickle.
Would you sign him?
So if he demands 6 years, I would say no. But you can't say no because he won you a World Series. But we said no to Pudge.
Yeah.
Who wanted 4 years and let him go.
Everyone's talking about Freddie leaving. Like, it's kind of understood that this was his last hurrah with the Atlanta Braves.
No, I think that everyone's talking about Correa leaving the Astros. No one's talking about Freddie leaving the Astros.
Really? People are talking about that? Again, I didn't watch a second.
No, no, and that's become more and more apparent throughout the hour. But I would say that, in fact, it's Freeman who is going to re-sign with the Braves, and Correa likely had his last game with the Astros.
Really? Correa is young. That guy's a hot shot.
He's a good player. He's a shortstop, but he's one of many shortstops.
Can't help but notice that you're talking to me like an idiot now.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to help the... Well, I'm assuming that the audience knows the same amount you do, so I'm saying that the position has the most strength in free agency. I don't want to come off that way at all. I don't care that
you
don't know.
Do you assume, much like me, the audience also didn't watch a second of this World Series?
I'm assuming that I watch a game in a different way than the audience, and that's why it's interesting. Don't you, when you speak to people who are analysts or who have been in an industry, don't you assume that they're paying a different level of attention?
Oh, yeah, all the time. That's why I trust people that are top of the pyramid analysts to tell me what to think about when it comes to football. And baseball,
so
too. I don't know shit about baseball anymore.
But that's my point. So I'm not being condescending to the audience. I'm trying to be informative.
Your point is that I don't know shit about baseball.
No. I'm actually just trying to say that it's Freddie Freeman who is very, very likely to sign with Atlanta, but he's got them by the S and C's.
Yeah.
And the reason he does is that he's a sort of youngish, but not too young as a free agent. When you're playing 33, you are not in your prime anymore when you are starting a free agent contract at 33. And 9 out of 10 contracts signed by free agents in their late early 30s or early mid 30s, those deals don't work out.
Yeah, historically in that sport.
But you don't have a choice with Freddie. You just don't.
That's a blanket statement, but is there any time that it did work out? I'm sure.
Obviously.
I'm sure a couple of times. The Giants had like a really old team. Those weren't necessarily free agent signings, but they had a real old team this year and were successful. And I think even they were the team of the decade in the teens. They had a lot of older players and made contributions there. But I'm trying to think of the guy that everyone
this year
swore
they had
was,
career bests.
Well, 2003. You guys signed the guy that was considered a bad signing at an advanced age, and you guys ended up winning a World Series with him at catcher, despite everybody on that staff hating him.
Well, steroids are awesome, right? I mean, they totally help.
Players age differently now. You're absolutely right. Now,
so
if you
totally
sign
different.
If you sign someone at 32 now, it's just basically this guy's, man, just looking, once again, applying my own prism to stuff, to be considered washed at 34, 33. It's a damn shame.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous, and if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it, because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
You mentioned that when you're hanging out with Ugla and Freddie Freeman, that's when you start thinking about the teeth. Do you just like lock in when they're talking to you?
It's a great question. It's also it's how you engage someone with a lazy eye as well.
Yeah.
Or how you engage Scherzer when he has two different color eyes.
I wouldn't stop looking at it.
So it's hard. You have to know when you're just talking to someone, mm-hmm. Do this next time as an exercise. Like we're doing it now, but we're not looking at each other too closely because of this, but we're in the same room. When we talk to each other, we're looking, hey, oh God, he's got a little bit of a zit on his cheek, or oh, I can notice that, but I don't care, I can move on. Oh, that's interesting, he shaved, but it's a little off. Or then you're just looking at his eyes and then forehead, and you're just looking at different places. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of normal, what people do when they're talking. But yeah. When someone has a lazy eye, or someone has two different color eyes, or someone has something going on in their mouth, you say to yourself, don't look only at that. Mm-hmm. Yet you find yourself only looking at that. Mm-hmm. And it's so uncomfortable because you can't stop no matter how hard you try.
I'm actually pretty good at making people not feel self-conscious. But in my mind, it's all I'm thinking about. Like I can barely get through the sentence because my mind is obsessing about it. But in terms of how they feel, I kind of feel like I'm considering that way.
But I think that you think you're tricking them, mm-hmm. and I'm almost positive that you're not. And I do have an example of this.
Really?
Because
with me?
No, not with you.
Okay, good. Because I was going to tell you, what's wrong with me?
It's me thinking that I'm tricking someone when in fact I'm not.
Okay.
So the first time that I saw Uggs and his veneers, I didn't say anything for the first few minutes of the conversation, and I thought that I was being cool, even though I couldn't stop looking, but I pretended not to look, and I was trying to maybe just look at something else and whatever the case may be. And finally, I just had to break the ice, and I said, hey, are those new teeth? And he said, man, you've been looking at them the whole time. And I thought I hadn't been. So maybe you think that you're super good at it, but in fact, you're not.
Let me see your smile real quick. You got a good grin. It's very white.
I have good teeth, but no, I never had braces, never had a retainer.
Really?
It is an absolute miracle, and it wasn't for lack of having a dentist because my siblings all did.
You do whitening? You do whitening?
Yes, I've done whitening,
yeah,
but I have sensitive teeth, so I get the shockers after I do some whitening.
Uh-huh.
And I find the juice is not worth the squeeze anymore because do you know what the shockers are when you white your teeth? You get a you'll just be talking in the middle of a sentence and then you'll have a shooting pain in your tooth.
I've never had that before.
It's the worst pain ever.
Talking about when you bite into an ice cream cone?
Worse than that. Not the thing on the roof of your mouth. Mm. Not the brain freeze.
No. I'm talking about like directly in the tooth. Like you feel like there's a nerve in your tooth and you feel
that's what it is then.
Piercing pain.
So I've not done that before with ice cream. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that feeling, but I will tell you that that's what it is. There is a nerve, and when it whitens, the nerve is a little exposed, I guess, and you get this shock every once in a while, and the pain stops you in your tracks. It's a little tiny tooth in a little tiny body, Yet you can be in the middle of a conversation. I could be doing a show. I could never whiten my teeth before a show, as an example, because when it hits, it's paralyzing. Well, you can't just talk through it, right? If my knee hurt right now, or I had a pain and I had a broken toe or whatever, I could get through it while in a show. But if you get the tooth nerve thing from whitening in the middle of a show, it goes, you have to stop for a long enough pause that it's uncomfortable.
Did you make Alex Anthopoulos, did I pronounce it right there that time?
Yes.
Well, we'll see. I'll ask my wife. We'll see what she has to say. Do you remember your time with him in Montreal all that much? I mean, I don't know how much interns were. Well, you were a bigwig over in Montreal. I don't know how much you mix it up with the interns over there.
Yeah, so I did a lot more with the interns. I'm going to rephrase that statement. Can we allow a rephrase of that?
Yep.
In Florida, I was a lot more involved with the interns. No, let me rephrase that. Unbelievable. I've got to try to find the right words. I had a bigger vested interest in the intern program in Florida because we had 55 interns who actually were responsible to operate the company as full-time employees, even though we paid them as interns. Whereas in Montreal, the internship program was much smaller. And so I was new to baseball, and therefore I did not. Do we have to wipe that?
No. Bad? I'm just, well, a little bit. I'm familiar with this move as someone that worked for Michael Yormark. Hire an intern to basically have a full-time job.
Does that make you sad?
I don't think it's actually something people can get away with anymore in 2021. I think internships kind of got canceled a few months ago.
So,
which, by the way, I have a totally different feeling on it. I'm very thankful.
I got to tell you what we did. Brian Chatton is the current assistant general manager of the Miami Marlins, who survived the Jeter changeover. He's the last guy standing. He started as an intern in the ticket sales department, and he wanted to be in baseball, as many of them do, and he struck up a relationship with Larry and Mike and me, and we brought him along. Manny Colon, our director of team travel, who Jeter got rid of, started as an intern in a different department. And once you're in, which is why I always suggest to people when they ask for career advice, if you want to work in sports, you got to be willing to live in any city, work for any sport, and do any job just to get in the door. And once you're in the door, you've got to make yourself different than everybody around you and not care when they don't work hard or when they're joking around or playing office politics, because you're going to get noticed.
The single proudest client from the David Samson internship program, us over here at the Dan Le Batard Show, we're very proud of our internship record and promoted from within. You're talking to a former Le Batard Show intern. Billy's a former Le Batard Show intern. Chris Whittingham, the voice of Marlins baseball, at least in stadium, Josh Appel, is an intern. Tampa area news anchor Ryan Bass is a Le Batard Show intern. Sar Sutted, your most proud moment as someone that had interns under him was which specific example?
Well, I gave you the most public example is going to be Brian Chatton, but there's examples of people in every department, in the community department who started as interns and ended up running the community department and had long, long careers with the Marlins. There's people who are interns who have gone on to do unbelievably great things with different organizations. We had someone named Juan Garcia, who is now running the RBI program, reviving baseball in inner cities for the Texas Rangers. All you want to do with interns is to train them, and you then pay them a stipend. But what you're giving them is a resume builder, and what you're getting from them is work. And you are able to quickly discern who's good and who's not. You are able to quickly figure out who's going to help you and who's not. And I always loved when people who worked for me went on to do other things, because I didn't surround myself with people who didn't want my job. I did the opposite. I surrounded myself with people who wanted my job. And that kept me sharp, and it kept them sharp, and it meant they were smart, and that's what I wanted. No yes people, just people who wanted my chair.
All right, let's go through a little bit of rapid fire here through some sports topics before we get to your review. Henry Ruggs was involved in a fatal accident, was driving under the influence. The Las Vegas Raiders acted so quickly, announcing that they have released him basically when the Braves were lifting the trophy. People were curious at the timing, wasn't reading too much into that. Your take on how the Raiders handled this situation, which ultimately probably set a template for a swift course of action in that sport.
Well, that accident it's not your ordinary DUI, where it's someone fell asleep. Let's say the GM of the of the Mets, Zach Scott, fell asleep at a light. Tony La Russa fell asleep at a light in Jupiter and was drunk, but the car was stopped and no one got hurt. We're talking about drunk driving and killing someone. He's going to go to prison. So to me, it's open and shut. It's not a question. He would have been released immediately, no matter how good he is, because he's not going to be available to play in anything other than the California Penal League, right? That's it. So there's no reason to not take a stand immediately. And in terms of doing it while the Braves were hoisting the trophy, believe me, I was not focused. When I ran the Marlins and we had issues with our team, I did not think for one second when there was an acute issue that I had to think about what was going on in other sports. I was so self-involved in our orbit that I was going to take care of what I had to take care of with reckless indifference toward timing and whether or not it would impact where people's attention is. It's not like a Friday news dump. You know the expression, a Friday news dump, where you would try to do something late Friday so it wouldn't be in the paper and no one cares about Friday news because they're on their weekend. Well, that concept doesn't exist anymore because the internet is a 24-hour news cycle now. So it's not like the Raiders were trying to hide this behind the Braves World Series. There is no hiding what's going on there. And that organization, man, it's just one thing after another there in Vegas. And I don't think there's a correlation between being in Vegas and having this happen, but it certainly doesn't help.
Yeah, I don't know if you've watched any of Mark Davis's press conferences. I'm sure they've made their way onto your timeline because anytime he talks, people seize on a couple interesting things going on with him. But there are rumors circulating that he doesn't necessarily fit the ownership club, and I think that's fairly obvious. And he kind of feels
his dad.
Yeah, but he kind of feels like he's being pushed out, and he kind of sounds conspiracy theorist when he talks in the media about what happened with John Gruden. And he is a dissenting voice. He's not holding the NFL line. He wants to see the emails too.
When you think of Mark Davis, I assume the first thing you think of is Al Davis.
No, hair.
Okay. So the first thing I think of when I think of Mark Davis is Al Davis. And the first thing I think of when I think of Al Davis is litigation.
Yeah.
Because that was my childhood, was an owner who was in litigation against his league all the time. And moving, I think in my life, they were the Oakland Raiders. They moved to Los Angeles and then they sued to go back to Oakland. And it was always something with Al.
He was always bucking against the NFL, but he had tenure. He had stature in that sport. Mark Davis is coming in as a son of Al Davis, and he's basically a new member to this club. So he has all the Davis eccentricities, none of the success, and again, that haircut.
Do you get to get the tenure of your dad?
No.
Or do you so Hal Steinbrenner starts over when he runs the team from George?
Yeah, I think so.
With the Yankees?
I think so. The Steinbrenner name carries weight, don't get me wrong, but he's not the boss.
Well, he's not the boss, but he's the boss. So you're saying he doesn't earn the capital B?
He starts
as a small B.
I'm saying Jerry Jones looks at Mark Davis, and when he does, he lingers around the hair for a little bit because how could you not? And then he just keeps moving on, whereas Al Davis commanded respect. Heck, Jerry Jones probably idolized Al Davis because Jerry Jones is a more corporate version of Al Davis, but he loves getting in personnel. He loves thinking he knows the game quite well. Al Davis was actually a football genius. Many people just remember him as a guy that looked like the Crypt Keeper and was a kook by the end, but that's not the case.
I'm not sure Jerry Jones idolized anybody.
Johnny Walker.
Except Jerry Jones.
Johnny Walker.
Oh, maybe that. Yeah. Or the Dos Equis guy.
Yeah, but I mean, the NFL has come a long way. If we use a Henry Ruggs example, when I was in high school, Leonard Little had a very similar issue, and he kept playing. And after he killed somebody with his vehicle after driving under the influence, he got another DUI, and he still got other chances. And across the pond, the team I support, Chelsea, Marcus Alonso has something like this in his past. And he's only got to deal with a couple of very uncomfortable chances when he goes on the road. So the NFL, some people may be thinking that they made the only move possible here. But if that's the case, it's a very recent sea change because that sport used to handle this way differently.
Boy, let's hope so. right? Because what you're saying is so disturbing to me. But I guess that's the equivalent of saying that it's never too late to change. And maybe we're trying to change now in terms of the way we look at gender equality or the way we look at homophobia or misogyny. Maybe we're realizing when we go back and look at movies, when I go back and listen to the song by Benny Mardones called Into the Night.
Oh my God, how uncomfortable.
Songs.
This happened to me the other day.
But it makes, I can't listen to it anymore.
She's and just I'm despondent 15, about what? That.
She was 16 years old. It never even occurred to me that that was an issue.
Yeah.
To me, that was
right off the top.
Wow, what a great start to a song.
Yeah, it's got a great start to the song, and then right off the top, she's just 16 years old, and I'm like, God damn it.
No, you weren't like that when you first heard it, though.
No, no, that was still a banger.
I donated money to Benny Mardones during COVID.
Really?
Yeah.
That's random.
Yeah, so I love that.
What's the story
song.
Behind that?
There is a story.
You can't
that.
Admit to loving that song anymore.
I can both admit to loving that song and to being incredibly uncomfortable now that I listen to it in a different way. I'm willing to admit that. I'm willing to admit that I loved Soul Man with C. Thomas Howell and Ray Dawn Chong.
Benny,
and now I'm willing to admit that that movie is incredibly not just inappropriate but hurtful.
Yeah. Benny Mardones was bedridden with COVID?
No, not COVID with COVID. Fears. It just happened to be during COVID. He had a disease and he was dying and he had no money. And so his family did a GoFundMe for him and I donated money as a thank you for
Into the
what
Night.
He had. What?
For Into the Night, as a thank you for Into the Night.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hate to think that there are people who I have used, and of course it's a very long list, to be entertained and was not able to properly show my appreciation. I think about this with actors all the time.
Yeah.
When actors are down on their luck, or when I see basketball players or baseball players who are homeless who have provided something for me, I feel a guilt or a responsibility when I learn about it to do something about it if something has impacted me. And the first marathon I ever did was 25 years ago. I'm running the New York Marathon on Sunday. And I have not run once since the Boston Marathon, might I add. But the first marathon I did was in 1996, the New York Marathon, November 3rd, actually. And I listened to Benny Mardones Into the Night almost on loop. And that I have such a recollection of him helping me through my first marathon as I was hitting the wall somewhere on First Avenue up toward the Bronx. And
that is a funny pump up song. I'm kind of down with it, but most people would say you gained inspiration and adrenaline from Benny Mardones's Into the Night. That's a very that's an upset, David.
So I love where your head's at. I listen to show tunes while I run. I listen to very calm music.
What's your favorite show tune? Like, what is your down with the sickness of show tunes?
Popular from Wicked. I'll listen to several times during a marathon. The entire soundtrack of Avenue Q. Definitely some Hamilton.
How about some Phantom?
Definitely some Rent. No Phantom.
No Phantom? Andrew Lloyd Webber did a DJ set. Do you have to see the videos of this thing? It was wild. He did a Phantom DJ set. What?
I did not like it. And I'm a major Broadway guy.
I'm not a Broadway guy either, but I respect the shit out of Phantom.
No, I'm a major Broadway guy, and I don't like Phantom.
Okay. Well, I like Hamilton. What's your favorite track from Hamilton? The Room Where It Happened?
That is a great song, but I don't listen to it often because it gets me too jacked up. So I like listening to
the King George
song.
A Broadway musical gets you too jacked up. Okay.
I want to explain so you can understand, and the runners who are listening will get it. I'm trying to get my heart rate down as my anxiety is increasing as I'm hitting the wall or as I'm going out too fast in a marathon. And when you listen to fast music with a beat, you tend to run faster and your heart rate goes higher. When you listen to calm, relaxing music, it tends to bring your heart rate down. And to me, the marathons and Ironman, et cetera, it's all about heart rate management.
What's your favorite track in Hamilton? Helpless?
No.
Satisfied?
Selfless, I love. Satisfied, I love. I know you must be looking at your phone, but I will tell you this.
Man, Leslie Odom Jr., what a voice. Are you going to watch Needle in a Time Stack?
What's that?
What? You don't know about Needle in a Time Stack?
No.
Okay, I'm going to send you this. Well, I kind of ruined the punchline because you have to see the entire trailer and then see what its ridiculous name, Needle in a Time Stack. But it's an interesting premise. I'm going to shoot you the trailer. This thing went viral. It stars Leslie Odom Jr.
He's really made himself a career.
Yeah, well, he was great in that.
Has anyone done more for Hispanics than Lin-Manuel Miranda? And he
probably
got such crap for In the Heights.
Yeah, I'm going to just, without looking it up, I'm going to say someone probably did more for Hispanics than Lin-Manuel Miranda. But
would
not
you
many.
Say he's, it's not many.
Not many.
And he got reamed for not casting enough dark-skinned people in the Heights. He got almost canceled for it.
What?
And it made me
What?
It made
He's
me
the most
insane.
Inclusive person in the history of Broadway.
Take a look and read about what happened with his movie In the Heights.
I won't.
An unbelievable musical that he
for
wrote
it.
Before Hamilton.
Really? I saw the first 10 minutes. I'm like, I'm out on this.
So the movie was terrible.
Yeah.
But he got, because I love the play so much, but he got crushed. And he had to release a statement apologizing for not being sensitive enough to dark-skinned Hispanics.
Huh. All right.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Moving on, what's your review for the week?
It's sort of on the same theme. I watched a documentary called This Changes Everything. Have you heard of it?
No.
It is done by Gina Davis.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize that Gina Davis...
What is she up
after
to?
After Thelma and Louise...
Olympics.
She started, do you know what Thelma and Louise is?
Yes, I know. That's what the movie that announced Brad Pitt to an unsuspecting world for the most part. Yes, it's an iconic scene where Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon drive off the cliff. Spoiler alert, at the end. Gina Davis was married to Jeff Goldblum. Gina Davis was a kick-ass action star in The Long Kiss Goodnight, and an amazing movie that I highly recommend to anybody. Gina Davis was an Olympic alternate, I believe, in archery.
I did not know that.
Look at that. You better come correct when you start spouting about Gina Davis around me. I'll tell you that.
But then you don't know what she's most famous for now? Did you just stop loving her after she didn't make the Olympic team?
Yeah.
After she wasn't
Failure.
Promoted off the alternate team. That was it.
Yeah. After there wasn't a longer kiss goodnight.
And you did, that would have been the sequel.
Yeah.
And
the movie's awesome.
A French kiss goodnight. So she was in a league of their own.
Great, Dottie.
Another very powerful movie about women.
Beetlejuice as well. Man, she
yes.
Look at it. Hit Row. Look at this. IMDb. Cutthroat Island.
Nah, that bankrupted a studio.
Yeah, is she going to be in Beetlejuice too? What are your feelings about Beetlejuice too?
I thought Waterworld bankrupted a studio. And Ishtar.
Well, you're a big Gene Triplehorn guy. And Waterworld's Ooh. Awesome. We can all agree. Waterworld was freaking awesome.
I had no issue with Waterworld whatsoever. No issue at all.
The scope, right? What were you saying about Gina Davis?
So the reason why she's famous now is after Thelma and Louise, she started an organization to try to promote women in Hollywood and figure out why women do not get enough roles. They're not directors. They're not producers. They're not writers. What's going on in this group,
I'm very embarrassed to admit this. I've seen this documentary. My wife started watching it, and I jumped in about 15 minutes in, and I watched the entire thing. It was spectacular. I did not know Gina Davis was attached to this, which is weird, considering I know more about Gina Davis than anyone you know.
Yeah, that is strange, because the entire second half of the documentary, while your eyes may have been open or not open, or you may have been distracted by other things you were doing at the time, although that's not exactly a sit on the couch with your high school girlfriend and make out documentary, but... The fact is that she started a think tank, if you will, and funded it. And then it got funding elsewhere as well, where they basically studied this, why so few women get to direct. And they had Reese Witherspoon on, Jessica Chastain, and they talked about what women go through in Hollywood. And I don't necessarily mean the Harvey Weinstein stuff, though that's definitely there, but just the general prejudice that comes when you've got a bunch of white studio male executives in charge of green lighting projects. And what fascinated me is that the tide is beginning to turn because there's so many talented women, just like there's so many talented men, that now we're saying there's just so many talented people. And without getting on a political soapbox, I love movies. I couldn't give a flying rat's ass whether my director is a woman or a man or a them or a he or a she. I want to be entertained with good stuff. And there's so much crap content out there that it doesn't matter to me. And the worst part about the documentary that got a ton of attention is the director of the documentary is a guy.
I couldn't believe that. I thought it was. I thought they were playing a joke on me when the credits rolled around at the end.
It's so silly.
I couldn't believe it. Top five Gina Davis roles. You want to do that? We'll do a shared top five.
We named them. Already.
Yeah. But we'll do a draft cell the way that we did with Edward Norton. And like an asshole, you picked The Illusionist. I'm still mad. I still think about that. It is as mad as I've been with you, even worse than the Blue Jays trade, David Samson. Yeah.
Which is now next season. That will be a decade ago. What is the statute of limitations?
I'm forever changed. I didn't watch a second of the World Series. No, I'm forever changed.
You're saying there's no statute of limitations.
I'm done. I'm done with it. Like that killed my interest in the sport, but we've been down that road before. Why don't you admit to the audience that you had fun
bringing your daughter to a game, though? Why don't you admit that?
I didn't really have fun. I brought my daughter to the game. I had a couple beers. Billy the Marlin waved. It was still like kind of weird with COVID. He was wearing an adorable see-through mask. But, you know, I had some of the food and then I left. And I dealt with the repercussions of eating the food. I'll go number five. Earth Girls Are Easy.
Love that movie.
I really do.
It's
a borderline cult classic. Maybe she met Jeff Goldblum on this film, or no, she met him on The Fly. They got married, but he was in Earth Girls Are Easy as well. So was Damon Wayans and Jim Carrey as well. Great film. They were aliens, and there was a musical number in it. I love it when a normal movie for one scene turns into a musical, and then it just
continues. There's a bunch of movies like that where out of nowhere they just start singing. I love that.
Yeah.
Mostly it's when they're on drugs, but still I love it.
So part of me did this as a joke, but I didn't think I'd run into someone else that liked Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh, I love that movie.
All right.
Okay, and number four is a big one.
Go for it. You do it.
Hero with Dustin Hoffman.
That was underrated.
Hey, Roy.
Totally underrated, Roy, right?
Absolutely. That was definitely underrated.
I've never seen it. Should I add to my
list? You should go ahead and see that. Dustin Hoffman was pretty good in that.
I can't push back, but it seems as though a really good Gina Davis movie is not going to make this top five because we've included Earth Girls Are Easy and Hero to start when she has banger after banger. Already, man, there is going to be a really good movie left off this list. I'm going to go with The Fly. Number three. The Fly terrified me. This is a Jeff Goldblum performance, first and foremost. But that movie is so great. The practical effects still hold up to this day, I think, although I haven't watched it in quite some time. The Brendel Fly terrified me. It was like the stages of his evolution into the full-on fly. The final stage was actually a disappointment. The lead-up was actually far scarier. Oh, my God.
With the fingernail.
Dude, with the fingernail. And then when he eats that dude's ankle by spitting the poison, the acid on it. My God. Gina Davis. What a performance. Jeff Goldblum. Outside of maybe Jurassic Park, the performance he's going to be remembered for. Love The Fly.
Won't he be remembered for The Big Chill?
Oh, that was a good movie.
No. Jurassic, you are vastly underestimating the cultural impact that Jurassic Park had.
Jurassic Park's in my top 100, but So here's the problem. By including The Fly and Earth Girls Are Easy, we've got three movies for two slots.
Yeah.
So what exactly is your plan?
Well,
because I have the next pick, and I'm not going to let the segment end without mentioning Quick Change. I'm just not going to do it.
God, yes. That wasn't one of the three movies.
Quick Change with Bill Murray and Randy Quaid.
Man.
And then you've got Tony Shalhoub as the cab driver. You've got Gina Davis. It is, and Jason Robards. Quick Change is a movie I may have seen 25 times.
We can't have Quick Change in our top five.
Bus driver pissed me off so much.
There are message boards dedicated to Gina Davis that are furious with us right now because we haven't mentioned Beetlejuice isn't on this so far. A League of Their Own isn't on this. Thelma and Louise isn't on this. And guess what? None of them are going to end up in our top five because I'm going Long Kiss Goodnight as my number one.
What?
Yeah. So, arguably the three movies she's remembered for most don't make our top five Gina Davis. We are terrible at these collaborative top fives.
Here's why, though. Because we have this personal feeling toward movies that get forgotten about, and we want to get it out into the universe, into the Levitard and Friends Network universe, so people can have an appreciation for movies that aren't what we would normally think of as associated that would be drafted. So what we end up doing is screwing ourselves. Then we have what's out there, a top five list that is not a real top five list, but is our personal top five
list. Which is how The Illusionist becomes number one on the Edward Norton list. I'm still mad.
Nah, man. Any movie directed by Rennie Harlan should be disqualified in every list ever. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Rennie Harlan did a John Cena movie. What else did he do? Rennie Harlan did
Cliffhanger.
He did Die Hard 2, right? Die Harder?
Oh, yeah. That doesn't count. That never happened. That's like Rocky 5.
Yeah. Die Harder did not count. Cliffhanger was freaking amazing.
It was the first 15 minutes. Yes, the first 15 minutes. And then the credits.
And Lithgow acted his ass off in that film.
As par for the course on that one, though.
Ass off.
We may have to do a draft for Sylvester Stallone, right? I don't think we have time to do it today.
I have my expert. Hang on. But I'm going to bring in.
It's going to be pretty funny if we do.
I'm bringing in. We're going to have to do this next week because I know you got to run. But Stugatz is always got his. He's always got his top
what
five.
What happened?
You've always got his top five Sylvester Stallone movies ready.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe we did this because I'm having some strange recollection of Stugatz entering at the end of one of these shows and talking about Rocky and then saying that Rocky 1 wasn't good, but you start with Rocky 4 or Rocky 3.
Yeah.
Am I having is this possible that this is in the archives already or am I in Total Recall?
You guys have done this before.
We've all done this show before.
Oh, and there's Dan. I think we've done this whole show before.
It's the way I rank the Rockies. It's Rocky 4, Rocky 3, Rocky 2, Rocky 1.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
I didn't go to the theater to see Rocky lose. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Five never happened. Okay. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal. We put together the worst Gina Davis top five in recorded history. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya. Bye.
See you, Dave.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.